So this fall, we have begun to re-examine our credo, which means in Latin, I believe. What do we believe as a community? And we are looking at our core values. So first, what is our credo?
Love wins.
And we're up to E in love today. We began with the L. These are renderings that our artists have made for us. We began with the L, and the L is in the word what? One of our first core values, balance. And we talked about balancing our lives as God would direct that all of history could be summarized by this balance between how we love God, how we love our neighbors, and how we love ourselves. That when we're in sync with a good balance, then we are living life to the full. Then we went to O, and we talked about what?
Hope
as another core value. And Joe spoke with us about the fact that it's very hard to really understand the nature of hope until you have experienced despair. And we talked about despair and hope, and we had youth that had just slept outside in boxes to try to become aware of what it is like for many youth, the largest homeless population in our valley here, to sleep on the streets. And we talked about hope and raised how much? Just that day, $1,200 for them just through the barn community. So hope, and giving hope to people who might feel great despair. Then last week we talked about the B in love, and our core value was
creativity.
And by the way, if you want to know a little bit more about what inspired the artists, please speak, because they would be glad to tell you what inspired their art. The L was done by Bobian, I believe. The O was done by Dave Jacoby. The B was done, wasn't here last week, but he's here this week, Brian Waljung. And the E, who did the E today? Will did the E. So if you want a little more explanation of what inspired their letter, please talk with them. So E is where we are today, and E is found in our core value of creating a safe space. As you can see, our core values are up here. And we tried to make this very able to be put in our brains and memorized kind of easily so that it's not sentences upon sentences, but we can remember these simple words of things that we value. Last week, by the way, we talked about creativity, and we talked about how we might be creative in raising $2,500 that we did not raise in our yard sale. And I've heard several of you have planned some. So I'm very excited about that. Keep planning, keep helping us return that money that we lost from our budget. But today, as you can see, if you have been here before, the room is set up differently, right, than it is typically set up. It is intentionally in a circle. And the circle is this wonderful sign of a safe place where all are kind of equal in the sight of God. And today, there are a few people in our circle that I want to talk with you a little bit about, because a circle is really good when a circle is working. But sometimes we don't feel a part of the circle. For instance, inside the circle is this lovely young man. He is the center of attention. Have you ever been inside a circle where you feel like everybody is looking at you? One time I sang in front of 5,000 people. I don't think I was ever so scared in my life. What happened if my voice left me? What happened if I forgot the words to what I was singing? What happened if in the middle of that high note that I had to hit, my voice cracked, right? Like when you're in the center, it's an interesting experience. I have done some preaching in front of very large crowds. One of them was 5,000 people. And as I'm preaching, I'm thinking, what if I lose my train of thought? What if what I think is going to effectively communicate doesn't effectively communicate? People look at me like, who is she and where is she from? And why did they invite her to come and do this? So sometimes we feel right on the inside. And like everybody is noting that we are right at the center of that attention, and that can be a very awkward place to be. Have you ever felt on the outside, looking in? Have you ever, maybe it started in first grade when you were a rebellious kid and you got to wear the dunce cap and put your head in the corner? They don't do crazy stuff like that anymore, but some of us do remember these times when teachers did these things, or you were caught chewing gum and you had to wear it on your nose, or, I mean, mean, there were just a lot of things to publicly shame. And so you felt like you were on the outside looking in. And this can happen a lot of ways. I remember the first time that I went to meet Bob's family. I was scared to death. I thought, what if they don't like me? I wanted to wear the right thing. I wanted to like be the right person, you know, because I really wanted to impress them. Have you ever been on the outside of a circle that's already established, right? A family system that's established, and all of a sudden you're being introduced to that system, for instance. Have you ever been like Mr. Brown? Have you ever felt like you stick out? Like something is wrong with this picture? Like you don't belong? Like you don't fit in? Like there's a modus operandi and you miss the memo. Bob and I went to a wedding in New Jersey one time, and we had not been to a formal wedding in New Jersey. And we and our friends went together, and we went to the wedding, and everything was lovely, and we wondered why there was 3 hours between the wedding and the reception, but we certainly weren't driving back to Pennsylvania and driving back, so we just killed some time, and we went to the reception to find out that everyone had gone home to put on black tuxes and black evening gowns. And so we showed up, the hunkies from Pennsylvania, McCundick, and we show up in what we would consider just normal wedding attire. We were the only people at the wedding who did not have on black tuxes and black evening gowns. It was a very long evening. Have you ever stuck out? Not necessarily intending to, but you didn't feel like you belonged, you didn't fit in, and so you sort of stuck out. Have you ever been stuck inside yourself? No one knows your pain. Maybe you are just sitting there today. Maybe you're like Martin. Maybe Martin's sitting here, and while she appears to be fitting in quite nicely, internally, maybe she doesn't feel like she fits in at all. Because maybe Marty has a deep, dark secret that she is very fearful somebody's going to find out. Maybe Marty has an addiction that isn't an addiction that people can see from the outside, but it's going on in the inside. Maybe Marty has just come from a huge fight with her husband, and everybody's asking her how she is, and she's saying fine, when really, her husband and her fight broke her heart, and she's here as a very broken person. Have you ever been in a group where, in fact, you might not be able to know, but really something is stuck? Something inside of you is a dark secret or a pain or a suffering, and it's not one that you feel safe sharing with anybody, maybe not even God. Today we want to talk about this word. We're talking about what it means to be a safe place. What does it mean, that word safe? We want to talk about the barn seeking to be a safe place to explore God, a safe place to ask questions, a safe place to raise your doubts, a safe place that we can create to agree to disagree, that I may think Donald Trump is the best thing since sliced bread, and you may think that Hillary Clinton is. A safe place to be able to say that I am a person who wants to take the scripture and the meaning this way, and another person says, no, I believe it should be taken this way. A person who believes in abortion and a person who doesn't believe in abortion. We want this to be a place where we can agree to disagree because we trust that God's love is strong enough to keep us together when many things would threaten to divide. Does that make sense? A safe place to take off our masks and show our authentic selves. A place where we seek to love one another, not if we do this right, or not because we are this or that, or not when we meet these certain criteria. But here we want to create the kind of place where we are loved in spite of who you discover that I am. Safe means free from danger. It means free from harm or damage. It means well-being. And I love this word. Safe actually means shelter. which is interesting, because how many of the kids that they feel safe in, like, their homes, right, or under their cover, shelter. In Isaiah 25, we read that God is our shelter from the storm. In Psalm 46, we read, God is a safe place to hide, ready to help when we need God. So my first question to you this morning is, what helps you to feel safe? What helps you to feel safe? And please wait until the mic reaches you, because we're having complaints that people can't hear people's answers, and we want to make sure. So kind of raise your hand so they can come to you. What helps you to feel safe? Helps you to feel a sense of safety within. Safe. Here we go. And just raise your hand, I'll come to you for the next person.
You all know I'm a physical dancer person, right? And so my body and moving is sort of my deepest self, my deepest language. And I learned quite a while ago that there's an image of a woman who touches Jesus' cloak, okay? And she was praying and she was in big trouble. So whenever I feel unsafe, I grab that cloak and I hold on to it with all my heart and all my being. And then I'm okay to go through the trial.
What helps you to feel safe? What helps you to feel safe?
There's a favorite song of mine that I recite when I feel unsafe, and it's Psalm 121. I'll lift up my eyes unto the hills, and I recite it to myself again and again. That helps me feel safe.
Set my eyes to the hills. From whence does my help come? My help comes from the Lord, the heaven and earth. Yeah. What else makes you feel safe? Clearly, safety might be an issue. What helps you feel safe?
Nothing in particular. However, something familiar.
Something familiar.
When I'm feeling unsafe, usually in a place that I'm unfamiliar with, something familiar will help make me feel safe.
I remember when I went to Poland and I was 15 years old on a six-week singing tour, and when we got off the plane in Poland, it was still under communist rule, when we got off the plane in the airport, there were police officers with machine guns all the way around, and I never experienced, I mean, I was a very innocent 15-year-old, and I remember feeling immediately unsafe. And I remember when I put my foot back on American soil for the first time, and got off at an airport where there weren't machine guns all the way. They might have been there, but they were hidden well. I just remember feeling safe, like I know this place, I understand this place. Yeah. What makes you feel safe over here?
This is kind of silly, but the thing I'm afraid of most are dinner parties. I'm a wicked introvert, and my husband makes me feel safe because he is my extrovert. Who I trust, it immediately feels like a safe space.
Yeah, Mary. Oh, sorry. You can go back. Mary's next. Go to Bob.
I know this is a grand illusion, but being in control.
Being in control makes you, it makes a lot of people feel safe when they're in control. It's maybe false safety, but right? It does. Yeah, Mary.
Similar to Joanne's. My family, just people who I know love and support me, and also kind of numbers. If I'm out there by myself, I feel vulnerable, but when I'm with other people, then I feel safe.
Okay? Yes. And then I have a second question. I think it'll be easier to answer.
When I see people genuinely smiling at me, or genuinely reflecting whatever emotion I'm feeling,
that makes you feel safe. Okay. What makes you feel unsafe? What makes you feel unsafe? I have a feeling these would come up a little bit.
This election going on right now. Seriously, makes
applications of some, you know, some words and actions.
Okay.
Makes me feel very unsafe. Being an African American
right now.
Right now makes me feel very unsafe.
Okay. What makes you feel unsafe, Rebel?
So being in a hotel room in La Entrada at around 2 a.m. and you hear what you think is gunfire, I felt unsafe.
What makes you feel unsafe? What makes you feel unsafe? Recall a time in your life when you felt unsafe. What caused
when that? You live among bad people, you're not safe. The body is not safe.
You live in a bad area where you don't feel safe with the neighbors that surround you. What makes you feel unsafe?
Very unsafe one time handing over my passport on a train in the middle of the night to somebody else, especially because of the time ISIS was just coming into play.
So we enter the world feeling somewhat safe, kind of trust the world. We trust that our needs will be met. Sometimes they are, and sometimes they aren't. When they aren't, the world becomes a very unsafe place. When they are, our trust of the world helps encourage us toward a feeling of safety. But over time, we discover that the world isn't always safe. John Powell wrote a book called Why Am I Afraid to Love? It has a lot to do about what makes us feel safe. And one of the things in there, when he's interviewing people, one of the people says this: I am afraid to tell you who I am. Because if I tell you who I am, you may not like who I am, and it's all I have. Let me say that again. I am afraid to tell you who I am. I'm afraid to reveal something about myself to you. Because if I do that, if I tell you who I am, if I reveal something about my nature to you, I tell you who I'm voting for in this election, okay? You may not like who I am, right? You may not like my choice. You may not like, it might make you feel uncomfortable what I share, and it's all I have. That's who I am. When we expose something about ourselves, we risk vulnerability. The word vulnerability, interestingly, comes from the Latin word vulnera, to wound. When we become vulnerable, right, we expose ourselves to what? To being wounded. Our capacity to be vulnerable is often linked with our shame. So the more times we've been vulnerable and burned, what happens? We become more protected, more guarded, more walls come up, more ego comes up. We don't want people to come close to our core, because when they come close to our core, what happens? They step all over it, right? They burn it. They don't see it as precious, right? So messages like, you don't, you know, if you could just be more like your sister. You know, why can't you be valedictorian like your brother? You're not very good at science. You can't draw. These things start to wound us, and when we're vulnerable, and we, like last week, we were talking, we draw this beautiful picture, and we hand it to somebody as a child who is still willing to be quite vulnerable. They hand the picture, and what happens to the person? They're so happy. They're so delighted. They're giving you a part of themselves, even if you can't even tell what it is. But they're very vulnerable. They're willing to give it. By the time we're adults, like we saw last week, and we draw that picture, now we're making excuses. Yeah, I really didn't look like you. I'm really sorry. I really screwed up. I didn't. Right? Because we're feeling very vulnerable, and we feel like we're going to be what? Judged, criticized, hurt, or whatever. And so we shut down. It is particularly hard for people to be vulnerable when they fear rejection, criticism, or you can fill in the blank for yourself. It is, however, more dangerous to God's purpose for humanity than I can speak when we cease being vulnerable. Because to cease being vulnerable, to cease revealing who we are as children of God, is to not live into our God-given destiny. To not be vulnerable, to create walls, to create layers of protection, which I understand why we all do it, why I do it, is to never experience life to the full. Brené Brown has spent her life researching vulnerability, and she says this: allowing ourselves to be truly seen and understood by others is a powerful source of creativity, innovation, and transformation. Vulnerability sounds like truth and feels like courage. Trust and courage aren't always comfortable, but they are never weakness. When we're vulnerable, we allow the other to see our true, real, authentic self. When we're not being vulnerable, we construct a false self, right? We construct the self that we want everybody to think we are in order to protect who we really are. If you really want to understand vulnerability at its best, go to an AA meeting. Watch.
I found a loving cookie. I have my own catering business now. And maybe I have replaced alcohol with chocolate chip cookies and vanilla wafers, banana pudding, donuts, jelly donuts to be specific, potato salad, shawarma, and nacho cheese. Y'all know what I'm talking about.
I don't like her.
It's been years.
You don't like her?
Well, I like her.
Right.
Yeah.
Sponsored.
And interesting. Some of you will never
get a number of the break.
I'm glad.
Come on, I'm glad
that I have my wounds. Now, I'm going to enjoy my donuts. I prefer them over hangovers.
We'll have a 10-minute break.
I really liked your speech. Oh, thank you, honey. All that dumb thing happened, so now I'm glad it's at least entertaining.
What's your name?
Kate.
This is my first time on these things. I mean, at least it's my first time that I'm not wasted.
Yeah, I remember doing some of that myself.
I'm sorry, I don't really know how this works. Can I get your number? Or I don't know if I'll need it, I just...
Oh yeah, of course. I'll be happy to explain it all to you. And we can also just talk. Look, this is the kind of meeting where anyone can share. Sharing always helps me, so try introducing yourself to the group.
I'm Kate. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Kate. I'm sorry, I'm gonna laugh. Just those words are weird. I mean, I guess I don't know if I'm an alcoholic, really. I just drink. I drink a lot. And I've always drank a lot. Everyone I know drinks a lot. So I never really thought it was a problem. But lately, it kind of seems like it is. So, I mean, I just want to be able to have a beer without it turning into 20 or wetting the bed. It just sort of seems like every time I drink, something awful happens, and all the things that used to be funny are not really funny anymore, and things have gone from embarrassing to scary, so. So yeah, I'm kind of scared.
God is a safe place, and at our best, community can be a safe place for us to expose. secrets. And all of it. At our best, community creates a place where we can be loved and accepted and forgiven and received. I'd like you to read with me God's word on just how God describes this as possible. Let's read. God is love. When we take up permanent residence in a life of love, we live in God and God lives in us. This way, love has the run of a house, becomes at home and mature in us, so that we're free of worry on Judgment Day. Our standing in the world is identical with Christ. There is no room in love for fear. Well-formed love banishes fear. Since fear is crippling, a fearful life, fear of death, fear of judgment, is one not yet fully formed in love. We observe how this kind of love, this vulnerability, casts away fear and creates a place of safety. I think we witness this best when we look at Trinity. If you think of God as Father, as Creator, as Parent, as Mother, and then you think of a child, and then you think a Redeemer right over here, and then you think of the Spirit and breath and wind, and you watch them work together. No one wants to assume authority over the other one. They all work and support one another. This one refers to this one, refers to this one, refers to that one, and away it goes. So we see in Trinity this wonderful model that God has given us of what we are meant to do in human relationship. Jesus supports God. God supports Jesus. Jesus, when he's leaving, sends Spirit. Spirit then reinforces what Jesus is talking about. You see how it's always just kind of this wonderful flow, and never one having the need to say, oh no, worship me, they're second, they're third. No, it's always about this wonderful circle of equality. None of us has perfectly well-formed love as human beings. We learn how love is healthily formed by taking up our residence, as it says, in God. And by watching how God does this, we learn how to do it. I'm convinced that we will never know a fully safe space unless we are willing to risk vulnerability to experience it. First with God, and then with God's creation in human beings. And look how God says we learn. Let's read this text. Watch what God does, and then you do it. Like children who learn proper behavior from their parents. Mostly what God does is love you. Keep company with him and learn a life of love. Observe how Christ loved us. His love was not cautious, but extravagant. He didn't love in order to get something from us, but to give everything of himself to us. Love like that. Ultimately, we learn the great truth of God's full and complete love and acceptance. We begin to be vulnerable and trust human beings ourselves. Because ultimately, while we're learning from God, it's like people with skin on. There's a story told of a mom and dad who were having a dinner party. They had it in the later evening so the kids could be in bed and they could enjoy their guests. And they're down at the dinner table when all of a sudden their little boy cries out, Mommy, Daddy, I'm scared of the dark. So one of them leaves the dinner party and goes up and says, Honey, I know you're scared. Don't worry about it. God is with you. You're going to be fine. They go back down to the dinner party. Freeman says, Mommy, Daddy, I'm scared of the dark. So Dad gets up this time and says, Honey, everything's going to be okay. Here, I'll put this little nightlight on for you. Nothing's going to hurt you. You're going to be fine. You just pray to God, and God will protect you and keep you safe. Down the stairs they go. Finally, say, Mommy, Daddy, I'm scared of the dark. Kind of infuriated by this point, they go up together and they say, Honey, we've told you. You are fine. We're not going to let anything happen to you. You just pray to God. God will take care of you. And the little kid looks up and says, I pray to God, but I need God to have skin on. See, it's not good enough that God is who God is. God needs people to be vulnerable and have skin on like God does. Sometimes we just need touch. We need to be with somebody who represents for us God with skin on. It's one of the reasons we have small groups here, so that in this small group format, when people are together in the privacy of a home, in a small group, say, listen to our definition of small groups. Small groups attempt to build true community, creating an environment where it is increasingly safe to discover and become comfortable with who we are. Journeying with others, small groups experience and learn through prayer and sharing questions, insights and doubts, study, practice, accountability, what it means to be a follower of Jesus. See, this is where God gets skin on, right? People in community are free to share their fears and joys, their weaknesses and their strengths, their struggles and their shortcomings. Embraced by this kind of communal love that we can have in small groups, if we're doing this right, we learn to love our neighbor as we're learning to love ourselves. Small groups do not hesitate and actually look forward to inviting others to journey alongside them as they learn to grow and serve God together. Our gatherings should be a place of safety where you can come in here, and if you had a fight the whole way here, you don't have to put on your Sunday gathering smile, but you can come in and say, man, this was a rough morning. And that somebody will hear that and receive that as they love on you. Where we can agree to disagree on important matters and trust that God is big enough to help us with that. When we're afraid, when we're challenged, we should be Jesus with skin on for one another. So I want to encourage you to pray that God would continue to grow our capacity to be a safe place, one for the other, here in this community. Amen.